calling the Honorable Mr. Johnson will be conducting your hearing at this time, sir. So just hold on.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Leonard. Could you just state your full name, your ADC number for us for the record, sir?
Hello, sir. Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
I can hear you now. I couldn't hear you real well.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. Good morning. Could you just state your full name and your ADC number for us for the record, sir?
My name is Gordon Lederer. My number is 49863.
Okay, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I want to introduce you to the board members that are going to be conducting your hearing today, sir. Although you cannot see us, I want to introduce you to the board members. You have the Honorable Luis Quinones, the Honorable David Neal, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chair, and you have the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse, and myself, sir. My name is Michael Johnson, and I am going to be acting as your panel chair this morning, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, sir. You are appearing before this board for a absolute discharge, regular parole, or home arrest, okay?
Yes, sir.
Is that right? Sir, you are currently incarcerated for a second-degree murder charge. You received an 18-and-a-half-year sentence for that charge. This sentence began on April 17th of 2004. You became parole eligible on August 16th of 2016. And it's been brought to my attention, sir, that looks like you have a mandatory or provisional release date for August 9th of 2018. Is that right, sir?
I believe so, sir.
Okay. So I do have your institutional progress report here with us, which I see that you have taken quite a bit of programming since you've been incarcerated. But it also says that you will be getting some work doing some construction business with Highway Construction in Phoenix, that you'll be living with your wife here in Phoenix, and you have personal plans to attend AA and NA classes, receive counseling through a church, Calvary Community Church. Is that right, in Phoenix?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you will be attending any parole-specific program given to you. You have a lot of family, friends, and church support to assist you with your transition from prison to life in the community. Is that right?
That's correct, sir.
Okay, sir, and it says that you have a minimal amount of violations since you've been incarcerated. It says there's no special conditions. They may have no discipline while serving this sentence, but I did see that I believe it was in 85, 86, there was a still in forgery, which may have been quite a while back that you actually had that. Is that right?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. So, in June of 86, sir, you appeared before this board and granted you 412A, which was a granted you parole, and then in 16, you came back before this board. Is that, were you incarcerated two times, sir?
Yeah, this is my second incarceration.
Okay, so when you were granted your parole, it looks like once you got that parole, you...
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you. There seems to be some interference over the speaker.
Okay, so once you got your parole, it looks like in 86, you didn't go back until this latest incident that you're currently incarcerated for. Is that right?
That's correct, sir. I actually, it was stated on my previous denial letter that I had previously violated parole, and that's incorrect, sir. That I believe the board was mistaken in that.
Okay. Well, that's so. Yeah, I'm not seeing that. So that was there, sir. That wasn't there. And it looks like you came before this board on April 26th of 16 for parole for home arrest, absolute discharge. You came before that same thing, and April 6th of 17 and. Each of those times you were actually denied, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So this incident, and I'm going to have you go over some information with us. You can go back over with us in your own words. This is an incident that occurred back in, I believe it was, looks like about December 18th, 1983. The victim of Monica McDonald, she went missing. Her mother filed a police report about a week later on December 27th. And while the police were there searching the victim's apartment, they found a bullet casing and blood spatter. And then at that time, Phoenix PD was notified by Maricopa County Sheriff's Office that they had discovered the body, which had been discovered by two young boys and their family in the desert on December 24th of 93. Police did interview me back on December 30th, 1993. And since they believed you were the last person with the victim, you denied any involvement in the incident at that time, sir. Moving on prior to about 11 or 12 years later, on April 16, 2004, you voluntarily turned yourself in to the police and confessed to the murder of the victim. At that time, you said that to believe that you were selling drugs and using drugs at that time. You're selling drugs to support your own habit. You believe that she had used up some money that she was supposed to give to you for drugs, and that you did not intend to kill her, but during the process, during the time the incident occurred, you were walking and I believe she stepped on something and shot her by accident. Is that right?
That's absolutely true, sir.
Okay. So why don't you tell us in your own words, I know you've been before this board before, but would you tell us in your own words what was going on with you during that period of time when this incident occurred?
At the time when the incident occurred, as I've stated previously, I had gone over there to retrieve some money that was owed to me through the victim. And during our conversation, the victim began getting excited, and in my attempt to try and deal with this situation or control the situation, I brought out a weapon, and subsequently, as things progressed, while I was standing before the victim, I had stepped back and I guess my foot made contact with a piece of a glass mirror that was on a carpeted floor, and the weight of my foot caused that mirror to break, and I guess the sensation was what caused me to react, and I fired my weapon.
Okay. And then after you fired the weapon, what happened?
Well, immediately the victim fell and collapsed, and I think at that point, you know, my struggle was with what to do from that point on, and I guess through fear and whatever else was driving me, I tried to cover it up.
And how did you try to cover that up, sir?
I removed the victim from the home and took the victim to where she was found out in the desert.
Okay. And so what did you do between the time that this actually occurred? The police interviewed you within a couple of weeks after the incident occurred, and it was so many years later that you turned yourself in. What were you doing during that period of time, and what caused you to turn yourself in, sir?
I'm trying to think back, and, you know, from the time that after that happened, I think there was so much that changed in my life, and I mean, it's even hard to describe. And I was married at the time, and we were both deeply involved in in drugs and alcohol consumption, and our lives were just spinning out of control. And I think it was at that point that shortly after that I decided I needed to get some help and make a change. And so I went into a drug treatment program and started participating in Alcoholics Anonymous and spent several years in that program. And during that time, I joined a church and began walking with the Lord. And through that process and that journey of my relationship with the Lord, I realized that while I knew the Lord could forgive me for what I had done, I think that my repentance was contingent upon my willingness to accept the consequences for it. And that's when I, working with a pastor, I decided that it was time to turn myself in for that.
And so once you turn yourself in, what was the feeling, or what was the desire after that, sir?
In turning myself in was that I guess that if it could be that the family would have some closure and understanding what happened and that justice would be served.
Okay. So let me ask you a question, sir. So when you turned yourself in, you never mentioned to the police that this was an accident. It's only subsequent to that this information about it being an accident came out. Why didn't you mention to the police about walking on the carpet instead of running there and accidentally shooting a victim?
Well, I believe I did mention that in my conversation with the police in two different police departments that I was interviewed in. I think when I was finally interviewed for the record was in downtown Phoenix. And my feeling at that time, sir, was that it's kind of hard to suggest an accident when you knowingly take a gun into a situation that doesn't belong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and after that point, whatever happens, I'm responsible for. And, you know, and it's hard in my mind to call that an accident.
So, sir, since you've been incarcerated on this second offense, you haven't had any prison discipline. How did you wind up just staying out of trouble? What were you doing while you were, since you've been in there, to keep yourself out of trouble, sir?
The only thing I can attribute that to, sir, under the circumstances, because as you know, that's pretty difficult to do, is that I came in walking with the Lord, and everybody knew it, and I don't try to hide it, and that's the life I try to lead in here. I'm not trying to be a different person in prison as I might be outside of prison, and so far, I believe that's what has both protected me and afforded me the opportunity to be a positive influence where I'm at.
Okay. So when's the last time you did any drugs or had any alcohol, sir?
Since prior to coming to prison.
Uh-huh. So I see in the report that when you did turn yourself in, that you did state at that time when you turned yourself in that you had been living with that for 10, 11 years, I believe it was, and that, you know, you were going to put it in God's hand, and you felt it, so that was the right thing to do, and you took full responsibility for your actions at that time.
Is yes,
anything,
sir.
Anything else that influenced that decision with you, sir?
I'm sorry, can you repeat
that? Was there anything else that influenced that decision with you, sir?
that influenced that decision?
Yes,
sir. No, sir, that was the driving, it remains the driving force in my life is how I stand before God.
So during that 10 years, did you get remarried or divorced or anything like that?
In the interim after I became sober, yes, I remarried and she's still with me.
Okay. All right, sir. I do want to make note that there is a letter here from the county attorney's office which objects to any parole or early release for you. There are also numerous, several letters in here from the victim's family, as well as there's letters of support in here from you, sir, and that you do have some supporters here today that are here. You have Ms. Lana Grass, and I believe that's your mom, and I believe your wife, Ms. Maria Letter, is also here, and I don't know if there's anyone else here that's going to be speaking on your behalf, but sir, before I go there, I'm going to go to the rest of the board and see if they have any questions. Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, and I'll try to keep it short. Mr. Letter, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to be careful with this because I'm not really asking for names or anything like that. We're not building any new cases. But how involved with drug trafficking were you when this murder happened?
By very low quantity. I think it was more for my own, to supply my own habit than anything else. So I can't say I was of any large amount. I just had been involved with it at that level for quite some time.
And as far as you turning yourself in to the authorities, again, I'm not asking for an individual, but did you have a sponsor talk you into this? Like, did you admit what had happened in your past and someone said that you needed to, and I'm just going to use an expression, not to mix religion with government, but did someone convince you that you needed to get right with the Lord?
I think that just came about as a natural process of my relationship with the Lord, and that's when I sought the counsel of a pastor, and and together in talking about that was the decision we came up with, that this was the right way to handle it.
I appreciate your candor. I guess my last question is, and I feel like I'm asking a bunch of delicate questions, but it looks like that you have an unreleased credit date of February 9, 2019. Is that correct?
To be honest with you, I don't even, I have no understanding of what's going on with these dates. I think they've changed several times. And last year, I think they actually prepared me to go home. And 7 days before I was supposed to go home, informed me that the dates had changed. And so I'm really confused about what's happening with the dates and just kind of at the mercy of the Department of Corrections on that, because I don't know and I haven't been able to get any solid answers.
I guess what I'm asking is, let me put it in context. This, you're eligible for parole. This hearing is your right. I'm going to look at the totality of this case and vote my conscience. But if this for you is about repentance, why do you think that we should let you out early?
I'm not trying to influence you one way or the other. I think that you should do what you're led to do, and I'm trusting that God's in control of that, and whether you let me out earlier or later is really not the point to me. I mean, it's important to me, obviously, because I want to be restored to my family, and I know it's important to my family. But you know, I trust that all of this is in the Lord's hands and the right thing is going to be done.
Well, sir, I want to thank you for your answer. I think that was a very high integrity response, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Ms. Rittenhouse.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Lederer, can you just reconfirm? I think I read that you went to the house because the victim owed you money?
Yes, sir.
And what did she owe you the money for?
For drugs.
Okay, so she had sold... explain that to me. I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Yeah, she... A certain quantity of which she was selling to her friends and whatnot, and it wasn't a lot of money. I think it was like $1,400.
So this was like your cut then?
Yes.
From some kind of a drug sale. Okay, got it. Okay. So the report I'm reading says the victim was shot twice in the face.
Yes, sir.
So can you explain how that happened? I mean, I understand about stepping on the mirror and the carpet, but why did you fire twice?
It was a semi-automatic weapon, okay. And I don't, you know, to be honest with you, the whole situation was happened so intensely fast that, you know, I could hardly believe it was happening when it happened. So it was like I fired the gun twice in succession, rapid succession.
Okay. And where was she? Was she sitting on the sofa or?
No, we were both standing in a room facing each other.
Okay. All right. And then is the restitution owed? I noticed in some of the documents there was a mention of $100,000, but then it's not really mentioned again.
I never have heard anything on that.
Okay, then that probably is my answer. And then my last question is, why, when you left the victim's body in the desert, why did you leave her nude?
I don't believe she was at the time. I know she was wearing a, I guess you'd call it like a house dress.
Okay.
And it was just one of those, like, loose-fitting cotton dresses with nothing on underneath.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you,
Mr. Johnson. Okay. If there's no more questions from the board, I'm going to...
Mr. Johnson?
Dr. Rock. I'm sorry.
I just have a couple of things. I wish you'd hear me better if I put my microphone on. Sir, why did you say that you went to her house?
It was to collect a debt.
Okay, and why did you take a gun to collect that debt?
Actually, I carried a gun everywhere that I went with at the time.
Okay. It says in our packet that when you turned yourself into the police, you said that she'd been stealing money from you from the drug sales, and that you decided that she needed to die, so you went to her house with that plan. You didn't intend to kill her at the house, but she started to struggle, so you killed her there. All I can tell you, that's what the pre-sentence report says, that you said when you originally turned yourself in.
Okay, that would not be a quote from me. I would have to say that was conjecture from whoever wrote that report.
Well, it says that's what you told the police, and they got that information from the police report. So, but I know it's not a direct quote from the police report, so I can't say whether they, you know, quoted you or paraphrased it or whatever, but it also says that that you admitted to shooting her in the head and also duct taping her, and that you stated you took the body to the desert and dumped her naked body there. Everything in our report says that the body was naked when it was found. So I, my question would be, why, you know, she wore a house dress, okay, rather than being naked when we confronted her. That's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, any more questions? Dr. Rogers.
Sir, you probably already answered this, but you're going to be getting out there soon, at any rate, unless something goes wrong between now and then. So, what are your plans, sir? Maybe, as I said, maybe you already answered this. What are your plan? What do you plan to do? You know, you had those 10 years, possibly, you know, before you turn yourself in, and so this time you won't have to have that on your mind. Since you have already served your time, so what are your real plans now, sir?
My plans are to restore my relationship with my family and continue basically doing what I was doing directly before I came to prison, and that would be participating in the community the way I was and living a lawful life.
Are you going to be active in your faith and your church? And would that be part of what you will be doing once you're out, sir?
Absolutely, sir. That, as I stated in my plan that was submitted, that my intention is to be participate with the church and with the AA community, excuse me, just as I had before.
Mm-hmm. Now, forgive me, I'll put it this way. It seemed to me that you said that you would, you know, reconnect, these are my words now, with your family, and you would get back together with your family. Have you maintained a close relationship with your family since you've been incarcerated, sir?
Absolutely. I enjoy a close relationship with not only with my family, but with the community that I was surrounded by through church and AA. And I still enjoy that. That support from them as well.
So how often do you see them all? If I put it this way, who else on the visitors list there since you've been incarcerated, sir?
Who is on my visitation list?
Yes, sir.
My mother, my wife, my father, and his wife. I have several friends from church that are on that visitation list, and all of them come regularly.
So I guess I know to ask this question. Therefore, at this point in time, you are looking forward to being released sometime in the near future. Am I correct, sir? That's a given. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful.
Okay. And you feel, and maybe this is an unfair question, kind of following up on what I think Mr. Kalanis was talking about a few moments ago. So you feel that, I mean, from a religious standpoint, and not to convince anyone else this is between you and your God, but you feel that you've been forgiven for the second-degree murder that took place, sir. You feel that that's already been forgiven, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so now you just be out to live a good life and to take up your life where you left off before you was turn yourself in. Okay. Okay, sir. I don't think I have anything else at this time. Thank you, Mr. Johnson, sir.
Okay, Mr. Ladder. We're going to go to your supporters that are here, and I'm going to let whoever you choose to come up first to speak just come up to the podium, state your full name, and go ahead and present what information you want to present to the board.
I'm mom. I'm Diana Grass, and I am Gwen's mother, and I also have 31 years of sobriety in AA, and we used to speak together, actually, when he was in AA. We used to, you know, go to groups, and we take turns, you know, in the same meeting and stuff, and we had a lot of good times in AA, and I used to have meetings at my home in fact, for the Knights, which the Knights is a very big group in Phoenix now, and they do a lot of good work in the community. They also go down south Mexico and build homes for people and do a lot of neat things, and they are backing him all the way. That's one of the groups that I've been in touch with, and the man I mentioned, you know, I always call a sponsor, and that's Paul Kopbrenner, and he's right there, and he says, I'm here for him, you know, tell him I love him, and of course, we all love each other in AA, you know, that's just the spiritual part of it, and the people that get the spiritual part of it are the ones that make it, you know, and I found that over the years with all the girls that I have sponsored. But going back to Gordon, I stayed up all night last night reading all of his old letters. Going back to when he was at Madison Street, or Madison Jail, you know what I'm talking about anyway. In the beginning, before they moved him to Florence, and then from Florence to, gosh, he was all over at Lewis, you know, in the Steiner unit, and then he was up in Colorado, and back and forth, and then finally up in Winslow, and from Winslow to the Apache unit at St. John's. But reading his letters, and I kept thinking, between crying and laughing on some of them, but listening to the growth of this young man, and when he was studying all his Bible studies, and he was getting help from his friends, people, he would connect with people that would connect him to churches that would sponsor him. And he got his degree, you know, and I mean, this is, to me, it was unbelievable. I mean, it brought me about on my spiritual too, because he was so influential in my spiritual growth. And I thought, the stories that I heard, and when I went to prison to visit him, I would talk to the ministers that would come in, and several times they'd come in and they would tell us, we don't know what we're going to do without him here, because he does so much work with the other prisoners and he helps them so much. And I thought, and they said, you know, we just have to say as a group that we just love him, you know. And I would laugh. I said, come on, we need him here too. Do you see what's going on in this world, you know? We need him out here. And they say, well, you know, he'll get there. And I don't know, just the stories I read, but I kept thinking last night, what was it? I woke up about 1 o'clock this morning and I thought, what was it that stood out so much in all of his letters from the very beginning, even when he was at Madison? And it was humility. How many of us really have humility? I mean, this is what stands out. He never, ever would blame anyone else. It was always strictly, you know, his doing. And he knew he was paying for his crime. And he was loving it because he could give back. And all I heard was all the things about Jesus Christ, and you know, every letter was talked about the religion right from the start, from the Madison thing. And I just kept thinking, what is it? And it was the humility. I mean, he really knows what he did. And he knows that he has to pay for that crime for the rest of his life. And he will. I know he will in my heart. He will give back. Because I saw him giving back. I saw him sponsor men in AA, I mean, six and seven at a time. And I mean, he was strict and good to them. And they loved each other, and they hung with each other, and they did good things in the community. And he paid back for his bad stuff. I mean, he did a couple of things, and he had to go, you know, make amends to restaurants and places like that where he got up and walked out and didn't pay his bill, you know, that kind of stuff. And he definitely went. I mean, he had one of the best sponsors there is. I mean, it was just phenomenal. But his sponsor did pass away. I can't say enough about the fact that he taught me so much about the religion, you know, and brought me around. Because I was going to church. I was religious, but I really wasn't. I didn't get that spirituality, and now I do. I understand what it is to give up your will, and give it to God, and have the strength in all that, and helping others, and doing Bible studies in Spanish. I mean, because he learned Spanish from his wife and took Spanish classes, and I mean, it was a miracle to me that he was giving back so much. And even the when I was visiting also, a lot of the inmates would come over to the table and tell me what a great Christian he was and how much he helped them. And now he plays music in the church services at the prison. You know, he plays guitar. He's learned to play guitar while he's in there also during all these studies. And it's all religious music. You know, and he's just, I know that he will be good for the community. I know that he will do the best that he can. Because everything he does it at the best. You know what I mean? And we say that sometimes about the drinking thing. When we drank the best we could, you know. But I mean, so anything he does or takes on, plus he's a very talented young man. He's extremely smart. He's an artist, which I don't know that he's pursued that much artwork in prison because he's been studying so much and he's had to fight along the way to get those studies done. You know, it's a struggle, but you gotta reach out, and he does. He knows how to do it. Okay. Without, I'll pass. Thank you so much.
Let me see if the board has any questions for you.
Okay.
Okay, the board, Mr. Kayles. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Maria Lederer, and I'm his wife. And all I can say is that I know you guys asked me before when we met, and I work at Taco Bell downtown. And he used to work in the office, like by Taco Bell side. And he used to come, he used to have breakfast, and that's the way I met with him. I speak no English at all when he started throughout the day with me. And I think I can communicate and people can understand me, so thanks God. But about him, the person that I know him, when I hear you guys, because every time that we come, I hear the detail of what he did, and it's like, oh God, like how did that happen? Like, it's just so passionate to me. Hear all the details that he, that person that I know, he was able to do that. But he's, God transformed him. I don't know if you guys know about God, but he can transform anybody, and he did for me. I used to be like so shocked, like what if he has to sleep with his TV on? And like, I go to sleep, and I can go to sleep with a lot of noise, but he used to have a TV on. After all this happened, I'm like, I don't know why, because that's what I believe. His conscience was like so heavy that he has to have like some kind of sounds so that he can go to sleep. But right now, it's like, he's a different man. He put all his trust in him, and like you ask him, okay, when he has to allow you to go early, you guys don't, and that's true. It's in God's hands, and he wants you to go, he will get out, he don't, he will stay. I do have a question about the dates, because I see in the system, and I called this parole officer, he came, he checked the house, he said the house has been authorized, so everything is good on that side, but I see a May 9 in the system. And I don't see what you guys saying, anything about May 9, so anybody can answer that question?
Go ahead.
No, May 9th is a temporary release, and I might ask Mr. Lesky to help me with this, but a temporary release can occur before, right, like 90 days or something, before the provisional release of August 9th. So the provisional was August 9th. The temporary release is May 9th. So what I don't know is what's the eligibility for that, Mr. Westby? I mean, does he, would he have to apply, or is that an automatic thing, or?
I would have to verify the information.
Right. So, yeah, it would be a question for Department of Corrections.
Because, like, I call, and they say, it is not up to us, it's up to Phoenix. So I called Phoenix,
okay.
I called and I talked to and my mother, and I talked to her too, her name is Daisy, and they passed me to somebody else, and they looked the records, because that happened last time. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of want to know, like this time, so, and I don't have able able to talk. Nobody has up to you guys right now.
Well, Daisy actually works for this department, this agency.
All this area.
But I think really, you can correct me on this, but I think she really needs to be, the family really needs to be in contact with Tom Crump.
Yeah.
I think so that they can get the exact time. Because if we give you a time, then it may not, but what they give you at Tom Crump, that's official. That's what they're going to go by.
That's what they said, that was official, but that's what I called the power officer, and he told me, hey, don't take that word from me, because if you guys don't get, if he don't get released, I don't want you to come back to me. So I was like, okay. So this, that's why I like this open, so
yeah, it's a difficult calculation of how they come up with the calculation, and we don't do it here. On the board, we only go by the calculations that we actually have, and that's why we try to refer it back to time comp, and that's why the parole officer is going to try to refer it back to time comp, because time comp is the official keeper, their official record, and how they come up with the time has to do with a variety of different things, and they calculate it, and so it's very difficult for us. We only can go by what they give us. You know, our recommendation would be to go to time because that information would be the information that all of us would have to go by.
Okay, so that means like everything is there, the same thing right now.
Well, what it simply means is that you're asking us about the May date and what that exactly means, and that we cannot give you the answer without, you know, it would have to come from time comp to explain what that is, and we don't want to give you some information that's not right. So that's why everyone's going to refer you back to time comp, because it's a difficult process of method that they have to go through with days. It's just none of us here on this board can do it. We can try to kind of understand it, but we can't really go through it, so we can't answer that question for you.
I think I can say in good faith, though, without putting a date on it, because I know it does need to be handled by time comp, by the DOC, that he has earned an early release credit date. I mean, that's very real. I think but everyone's hesitant to say that's the date, because maybe there is some sort of like difference in the calculation that we're not in control, certainly not from the Board of Clemency, Executive Clemency, but I think in good faith, someone in there has got to earn release credit date. I think people are a little hesitant to say what it is without having a firm last word calculation.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, our home is ready to receive him any day that he's getting ready to come home, so we'll be ready to. My brother and we have a 2 year old, almost 2 years old baby, so we're so excited to. Ready to go. Just welcome him. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wanted to speak? Okay. Mr. Letta?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we're coming up on a conclusion on your hearing. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the board before the board goes into discussion? So I'll repeat myself.
Well, as you can see, I think my family is passionately hoping that I will come home to them soon. And I have to tell you that previously I had more people show up at your hearings, and I have gotten to the point where I more for the sake of them, have tried to discourage them from doing that any further, simply because it's such an awful emotional roller coaster for them. And, you know, I mean, I'm here. I accept that this is my time. I bought this. And what grieves me is that they continue to suffer for this. And that's really what I want to say about that.
Okay. All right, so Mr. Letter, the board's going to go into discussion. So while the board's in discussion, I am going to ask you to remain on the phone so that you can hear the discussion taking place. The board will then make a determination as to whether to deny or grant you parole or home arrest or an absolute discharge, and then we'll get back to you, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, so the board is now going into a discussion at this time. And I do want to, as part of the discussion, I know I kind of went through one of these, one of the letters that was from Tim West, PhD, who is a, I think is a, if I remember, a clinical psychologist, maybe, I'm not sure. But there was just, you know, I just want to put it on the record, you know, because of that letter that, you know, this board has some really difficult decisions to make, and in making those decisions, this board has to take in not just the consideration of the person that's incarcerated, but also the victim and the crime itself, and then make a decision as to what we have to do. And generally, you know, those are very difficult decisions, and those decisions are made when generally, you know, somebody is not totally happy with that decision. But, you know, ultimately, we want to try to make sure that the person being released is a good, is not going to go out, at least we feel they're not going to go out and commit any more crimes. We also want to feel like that, you know, that person's also accepted and made some changes and gotten the time for the crime. In this particular incident, it was original charge of first degree murder. That first degree murder charge was allowed to plead to a second degree murder charge, which, you know, included a lesser time. And it, so we take all of those things into consideration. But I just wanted to put those things on the record in response to the one letter that was included in the file. And, you know, I do want to say that, you know, based on the information and what I've been able to obtain from the information that we have, I don't think that Mr. Lederer would be a threat to the community or likely go back out and commit a crime. He did go 10 years out there, 11 years before he actually turned himself in, but he did turn himself in to the police at the time that he turned himself in. He did admit to the crime. He did take full responsibility for his actions and what he did. There were some different statements between the time that he turned himself in, which was 10 years later, and the time that he's actually coming for this board the last time, in this current time that he's actually been. I think that he's done some good things while he's been incarcerated. He has had no violations since he's been incarcerated. He didn't receive any tickets while he's been incarcerated, although it does look like he'll be released in a very short period of time, regardless to what this board, what actions this board actually takes at this time. I tell you that I would think it would be much better for Mr. Lavery to be released and be on home arrest and work his way back in after he served his time in prison. I think that would be the best action for this board to take at this time. However, that is just my opinion as one board member, and I'm willing to listen to the rest of my colleagues. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Lederer's prison term has just been exemplary. I mean, the only two minors he's ever had for discipline were on a previous conviction, so he's had no discipline at all. I agree. I don't think that he would be any sort of a threat to commit another crime. I think he's kind of figured it out. He matured like people do. And I agree with you. I think that the kind of easing back in on a home arrest would be a good plan.
Agree, Mr. Canales.
Agree.
Yeah.
I'm not going to I'm not going to get argumentative on this one. I believe in almost everything my colleagues have said. I have a little bit of concern about the interest of justice because he was given a lenient sentence. And he certainly earned an early release, and I think that that is a powerful thing. I've been wrangling over the interest of justice in and of itself based on the nature of the crime, but I think ultimately my colleague's argument kind of wins me over in that Mr. Lederer is coming out soon, one way or the other, and I think if in such cases that opens up the door to wanting good structured and monitored oversight of his transition back to the community. So I will agree with my colleagues ultimately. How's that?
Okay. And I'm going to make a motion to grant Mr. Lederer a home arrest, deny him an absolute discharge or regular parole.
Second.
Agreed.
As conditions of the home arrest, I'm going to mark that we have to follow all mandatory DOC sanctions, no alcohol use, random tests of drugs and alcohol. No contact with victim's family. I'm not sure if there's any restitution, but if there is, I'm going to mark must pay restitution. Has to abide by institutional rules, partake in any program and that stuff as directed. You know, I'm going to mark may not operate a motor vehicle without the approval of his parole officer, because cars and stuff have changed so drastically in the last 10 years. Now we're looking at cars that are stopped by themselves. So. I think that's just an Uber car. Okay, Mr. Lederer?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir, the board has voted to grant you home arrest status, deny you an absolute discharge or regular parole. So I want to inform you that when you are on home arrest, you are still in the custody of the Department of Correction, with the exception that you are at home. You will be on a monitor system. You will be on a scheduled service. You have to maintain that schedule, a weekly schedule, maintain your relationship with the PO. I'm also, what I didn't mark on here, which I'm going to mark on here, let me just look this up real quick. But you are to, I'm going to recommend that, and that does not necessarily mean that it's going to happen. It's strictly up to the parole department. But I am going to recommend that you're able to live with your wife, and I'm going to make sure I have the right address. 4120 West Lupine Avenue, Phoenix, Arizona, 85029. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm going to include that on here. Sir, that you will pay a monthly fee of $65 after 60 days of your release. You will be having to pay that fee, $65, right? And I'm going to mark that it will be start 60 days after your actual release. So, sir, as I was informing you that when you're on home arrest, sir, you are on some strict guidelines, and you're not able to go and do the things, but your parole officer will sit down and explain those things to you, and then you will have the option to come back before this board on or in about 6 months after your release, sir. I also want to say to you and your family that the board has made this decision. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process that they have to go through to get your release, so it could take weeks before, you know, you're actually released. We do try to encourage people to not go back and tell everybody that they've been released so that they don't get put in a situation that causes them some problems to prevent them from being able to be released, sir. Are you able to abide by those conditions on your release, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right, sir.
Mr. Johnson, don't forget that we must have the 2 months. Resources.
Okay, so he says that you, and that's absolutely right. I just kind of made an assumption, but, sir, Ms. Lambert, could you come back up here, please?
Me?
No, the wife.
Oh.
Just want to put it on record.
Yes, yes. So, Ms. Lambert, if he was paroled back to your home, the Department of Corrections has a stipulation that he has to have 2 months of living expenses and 2 months of a place to pay rent. So if he moves, comes back home with you, then we have to be assured that he's going to be able to be financially stable and have a place to stay for 2 months.
That's not a problem.
Okay.
We have money.
Okay.
I have $10,000 in my savings, waiting for him to start a business.
Okay. Well, sir, we just have to, that is just a stipulation that we have from the Department of Corrections, so we want to make sure that we have that on record. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Lauer?
Yes, sir.
Sir, I want to thank you for participating in your hearing at this time. That's going to conclude your hearing at this time. Do you understand all the information that we've gone through?
Yes, I do, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. I do want to thank the family and the supporters for coming down and being here today. That's going to conclude this hearing at this time. Thank you.